A 21-61 season ended for the Blazers on Sunday, and then on Monday, we were told by Blazers GM Joe Cronin that the plan is to remain in development mode, unless. We'll get to that unless in a second here on the Blazer Focus podcast. Hello, I'm Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian, Oregon Live, joined by Craig Burnback. Craig, I was at the practice facility Monday for about 4 hours to get less than 2 hours of content in a very disorganized exit interview situation where sometimes we waited a half an hour in between interview subjects, but we all weathered through it. They gave us some donuts at the end to keep us quiet and shut us up on the way out.
Donuts work.
Donuts can work. Hey, sorry for all that wasted time. Have a donut. But it was still a very interesting day. Did you get a chance to listen to much of it?
Well, you're working your real job, huh? You weren't able to tune in.
But you know, the good news is that at night, you know, I needed to go to sleep. It was mostly pretty boring. It was nothing that exciting that came out of it, right? There was no real, what is Damian Lillard going to say? You know, that's what we've had for years. And,
right.
Or what's CJ going to say? I wanted to pay attention. The most interesting thing to me that I was looking forward to was Cronin and Billups and where they were. Were they in the same page? Are they in the same chapter? Are they in the same book? And then in the end, I think that's going to be the most interesting part of our conversation is, are they on the same page? Are they in the same chapter? Are they in the same book? Because to me, there's no players to concentrate on, really. I mean, you knew Simons. I got questions about what Simons is going to say or do. Does he want out? Does he not? But I know he's not going to say anything like that. You know, he's not that guy. And everyone else on the roster, you're like, well, we know Sharp's coming back. We know Scoot's coming back. And then after that, you're like, Ayton's coming back, probably. But after that, you're like, everyone else here might not be part of this, you know, the future. So, I mean, did you walk away thinking that the Billups Cronin thing was the most interesting thing?
Oh yeah, by far, because it was such a bad season. There were so many injuries, and you just wonder if there would be this urgency to try and maybe accelerate things and try and maybe make some moves that can make you more competitive. But I'm not completely surprised at where Cronin is with this. Let's dive into that second. Let's just get the Billups situation out of the way first, right? Because, you know, I think everyone believed he was going to be back. And Cronin made it perfectly clear, yes, he's coming back. Billups talked as if he was coming back. He's definitely coming back. The question, though, of course, is that he has just 1 year left on his contract and an option for a fifth year. I asked him point blank, do you expect some kind of movement on that? He said, that's not necessary for me to address. And when I asked Cronin about it, he said, I'm not going to talk about contracts with staff. However, in public, ever. And yeah, I pretty much knew that, but I just want to get it on the record. Something needs to be done there, I think, because especially if you're going to get to what we're going to talk about in the second conversation, if you're just going to run it back with maybe some minor tweaks, basically saying that we expect to definitely not make the playoffs. We might be bad again. You mix in some injuries and then you start tinkering. So you tank to try and get a high pick in what is supposed to be a great draft as opposed to this 2004 draft, then that could be the play. And why would anyone believe any differently? Because we've seen them orchestrate falling apart and tanking 3 times already, right? But Billups, he wants to win. He's done doing this because he's had to do it for 3 years. However, he's had to do it for 3 years because there were some hiccups in terms of what the plan was going to be. And now there's a clear plan, which kind of mirrors what OKC did, right? And OKC went through a 22-win season and a 24-win season, and then boom, they go to 40. Whereas right now, you can't necessarily count the previous two because those, Dame got hurt, CJ got hurt, they traded CJ, that was a reset, GM got fired. Then the next year, they were actually trying to win that year until the very end when things fell apart, and they still were thinking they were building around Dame. So they really only had one true year of this rebuild from the bottom. And so
right, you only had one true rebuild, but you've had three straight tank years.
Right, but
on purpose or not.
Well, yeah, true. But at the end of the day, I mean, you can make the argument that this was the first year of that a la OKC, right. And then next year would be the second year of that. And then if you've accumulated enough talent, then after that you start seeing growth, and then maybe boom, guys pop, and you become what OKC became, which obviously is the fantasy. And we've seen it happen with other franchises too. So if you look at it like that, it's only really been 1 year, but for Billups, it's been three, and he wants to win. But anyway, I feel like something's going to happen. That at the very least, you pick up his fifth option. At the most, you give him an extension and you say, okay, we want you to ride this out with us, but we want you to also, you know, reap the rewards when it's over, as opposed to, we're going to make you prove yourself in a year. We're not going to give you any more help. Now, to Crona's credit, he exonerates Billups of any responsibility or blame for their record. He's like,
he heaps praise. He heaps praise.
Yeah, he said, look at me. You know, I'm the one who put the rosters together. And he heaps praise for the development and his coaching, how he communicates and things he does outside of coaching with, you know, staffing and being involved in everything. So it sounded like he's Cronin's fully invested in having Billups have his fingerprints all over the place. And to me, you don't really do that if you're planning on blowing him out and you're blaming him for what's going on. I don't know how anyone can blame him. Like, I see some people out there, we need to fire Billups, we need to fire Billups. And I'm like, what do you really think they should have won? Like, where should they have been better? Their top eight players missed 297 games. I defy you to find a team, any team,
and by the way,
go through that.
They're not that good.
And fully healthy, they probably still weren't a play-in team. So what are we talking about here?
I say their top players are not that good.
I mean, they're okay.
They're okay, but I'm not. You didn't lose Kevin Durant. You didn't lose Damian Lillard. You know what I mean? Like,
right?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, you're not losing an All Star. You're not losing. Yeah. Good.
I just say, like, to me, the better argument is he won too many games, and they don't have the best percentage because they're so close. And right. In the end, you know, they end up in a decent position and a chance in a really bad draft. And thank you, Golden State. Right? Like, so. Yeah, it's crazy to blame Billups. And I'm going to continue with my thing. If I'm the Blazers, I'm more worried that Billups walks than I am about keeping him. Because why would the Blazers have no reason to fire Chauncey Billups other than they just want to restart, you know, like and say, hey, man, we're just going to restart. Right. Not because of his performance. But if you're Billups, I feel there are way more reasons to say, I'm good. I'm going to go somewhere else and do something else because this guy just got named to the Hall of Fame. Now this guy, this losing is killing him. You know, it's really hard. And he doesn't even have the roster to know who to play every night. Not just because of injuries, but because of an inconsistent roster, like a heavy roster here and a light roster there. Right. Like he's got more, even healthy, he's got, you know, he's got small guards and two bigs. and the one big hands, you know, like, and none of them could stay healthy. So, but you know what I mean? Like he's got no forwards other than, you know, he's got Grant. So now you got one forward. He's 31 or whatever. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, he doesn't even have a clear path to what the expectation of development is. So, yeah, there's no Billups. Yeah, I will not, until Billups signs an extension, I'll wonder if he's saying, you know what? Let's, because, you know, extensions could have buyouts.
True.
And maybe he wants to say, like, if we're still in a place where you think you should fire me after a year, I'm probably good. I'm good here. Like I'm ready to go somewhere else. So,
right.
But of course, financial stability is, you know, there's a lot of money at stake. So, and no one, no matter how much money you have, there's pride and stuff there. So, I just think that any questioning of a Billups at this point and anyone who says they know if he's a good coach or not, it's just like, you're making it up. Like, I don't know. Like, it seems like he's done some good stuff.
One of the common themes is like, he's not developing guys fast enough. What does that even mean?
Oh, yeah,
who's not developing fast enough? If we're talking about Sharp, Sharp just only played 30-something games.
Yeah.
And then Scoot, it's his first year. I'm gonna write a story later where I look at a lot of elite guards and what they were their first season. It wasn't pretty for a lot of them, right?
Including Chauncey Billups.
The numbers are kind of, including Chauncey Billups. So yeah. Scoot's season, really, if you're fair, was on par with what should have been expected. Maybe a little bit below. It was way below the hype machine nonsense. But if you believe that, that's 100% on you. You just weren't paying attention. But I don't think he failed there at all. And then as far as developing the roster and chemistry, guys are out of the lineup. The first night, your best player hurts his thumb. And then your second best player was struggling with feeling his way through the entire process, on and off the court. That's Ayton. And then he finally figured it out late after Ant was gone. Like, there's just no rhyme or reason to blame this guy. It's borderline.
And he never lost a team.
He never lost a team. Clear. Every player swears by him. Now, what are they going to say publicly? I mean, some, but we know. Yeah, I mean,
you know.
People know. And I think there's a ton of respect there for him. I just think sometimes fans don't understand how coaching and development really works. They just want to see their team win, so they're going to blame somebody, and that's fine. I guess I get it, but it's just mindless. At the end of the day, what I think is going to happen is that I do think they're going to give him some level of security that we believe in everything you've done to this point. You're piling up losses to develop these guys, and we're not going to leave you dangling. Because I said the phrase straight up, like, to not be developing players for someone else, right? I can't remember which one I said that to. I think it was Cronin. So I think they're going to take care of the situation. But like you said, Billups could also be like, maybe there's a team out there, wink, wink, Milwaukee Bucks, that if teams struggle, that fall out of the playoffs, someone says they want Billups. Now, some people might say, that's crazy. Well, I mean, you can call it crazy all you want, but, you know, Chauncey Billups is going to win with better players. Is he going to win the championship? I don't know. But every coach is guaranteed pretty much to win more games with better players. So who knows what will happen there. But I think if I'm the Blazers, I try and give him some security to know that you believe in him and you know this isn't his fault, and that if there's light at the end of the tunnel, he's going to be the one coaching the team when you get there.
Right, and then he's Cronin's guy. Because right now, technically, he's not Cronin's guy because Olshay hired him.
I kind of think that's shifted, though, if you bring him back for a third. For a fourth.
Yeah, I mean,
because he took over Billups' first year. So he brought him back for the second, third. He's bringing him back again. It's almost like, I mean, extension means more. Yes. But it's almost like Cronin has said, we're with this guy.
Yeah, except for we don't know about ownership. Got to bring it up. And sometimes, you know, ownership's like, no, we're not going to pay two contracts. You know, we're not going to pay them out. And it's not like the Blazers had under Paul Allen, that was never a factor. But we don't know what that factors are. So, yes.
True. And that's why you give security, right?
And they've been together most of the time. So you're right. I mean, I agree. Like, he could have blown him out right away if he had that power. We don't know if he does.
Right.
And said, look, I'm bringing my guy. They seem to have a good relationship. There's no doubt to me. The bigger question is if there was a different ownership dynamic and we had any connection to what ownership was thinking, because we don't. The bigger question is Joe Cronin coming? You know, like, are you sticking with Joe Cronin? Because you can say whatever you want about, well, the true tank and not tank. The resume says tank, trade Dame, tank. Like, that's where we're at in his that's his resume. Like,
yeah, I don't blame him. I mean, I blame him. Okay, we all know how I feel about the Dame situation. Like, I think they should have just built around Dame.
That's a big
Dame.
Thing to blame him for. It's the biggest thing.
Right, for me. But clearly, Burt Cold was behind it. He was cool with it. 100%.
Well, you say clearly, I don't know if anything's clearly.
I talked to him. I mean, unless he's lying.
Yeah.
Clearly. Like, they were good with it. As a matter of fact, it's been compared by some within the Vulcan world to the Russell Wilson deal. You traded away the expensive marquee guy to get a bunch of stuff. You traded away Damon to get a bunch of stuff. So I don't think anyone's blaming Cronin at all. I mean, what are we blaming him for? For losing? No, that's a good thing. You want to lose because you want to get high picks. And they knew they were going to lose because you got rid of one of the greatest players of all time in your franchise for Scoot Henderson. So you're going to lose. So then they're committed to developing. If you're committed to developing, you got to suck up and lose just like OKC.
Right. But you can blame him that trading Bill that the plan wasn't communicated openly and honestly to fans. You can blame him that it wasn't the right decision. You can blame him that the CJ, you know, the CJ trade wasn't great.
But they don't believe it was the wrong decision. The people who would fire Cronin don't believe he made the wrong decision.
Oh, look, I don't think he's getting fired. Yet. I'm just saying if you're going to be a person that says who should get fired, Billups, and you're blaming Billups, that to me is crazy.
Right.
There is blame for Cronin. Like he said, he owns it. Like this is where the team is.
Right.
Now, everyone would have drafted Scoot. Like, so that's fine. Now, I would have built around Dame because I know that losing a lot sucks because I'm a Knicks fan and I'm celebrating because I know that 9 straight years or whatever it was of going to the playoffs does not suck. Even if you don't win a championship, it's frustrating, but it doesn't suck. You can at least watch basketball. You know what I mean? Like, and there's a chance you got to the Western Conference Finals because every once in a while you get lucky, you know? I mean, and you fall through. And you get there. I mean, Michael Jordan retired. The Rockets got 2. You know what I mean? They did have Hakeem, and they were awesome. So I'm not – but you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're in it, you have a chance. It's like the lottery. Got to be in it to win it. And once you're where you are right now –
the NBA is wide open
now.
The NBA is wide open.
Right. The mocking of Miami is hysterical. Like, they lost that game. I'm like, they were in the play-in, and now their best players out there probably gone. Their fan base got to watch basketball with hope, right? That of that season being extending.
Right.
The problem with tanking 3 years in a row, and even if you're saying it wasn't on purpose, is your fan base and your players and your franchise and your corporate salespeople and your sponsorship people, your broadcast partners, they all have to suffer the consequences of being terrible. And there's an end, and there's a part where people just disconnect and get angry. Now, the Blazers fan base is amazing. You have so many people that will still look and try to find the positive at times. And that's what – but they're not tuning in. You know, like they're not watching. We know tickets are – you know, look, their attendance was so much better than I even thought it would be in the end. Now, we do know that some of those tickets were discounted. You know, but I'm just saying, like, they're not at the bottom. They're not at the bottom, and there should be, because the product that they had to buy, you don't go to a restaurant to get bad food. You stop going after a while, right? Even if it used to be good. So, but yeah, I don't have the vision for this team right now to get there. Like you talk about OKC. Well, they drafted a guy that's in the MVP discussion in his early 20s. You know what I mean? Like, the Blazers aren't there yet.
OKC when they were winning 20 games with that guy.
Right, but they saw it. Right? They saw it.
And I think the Blazers still see it with... Okay, let's shift to the other part of this, which was, are Billups and Chauncey... Excuse me, Billups and Cronin on the same page? And what's realistic for this offseason and what they're going to look like next season, how many games they can win. So I asked, Cronin basically said up front that development remains a major focus, that they're not going to make some kind of major big splash move because they're not good enough. Because if you do that, and I wrote this in my article, it's like, if you do that and you get a bigger piece, which how many times has the Blazers ever been able to go out and get a bigger piece like that, right? So it's fancy anyway. But if you give a bunch of assets and you get that bigger piece, what's left around that bigger piece? Now you're back to where you were with Dame when you couldn't build around Dame. So his point was, we don't have enough talent. Our talent base is not there. We're not good enough talent-wise to even think that way. We have to keep accumulating talent, which to me means lottery. Right? That's where you're going to accumulate the talent. Now, you could flip Brogdon in a pick into something, maybe. You could turn Ant into something that fits better with Scoot and Shaden. There's little things you could do, but the bottom line is they're not going to do anything that's going to put them in a position where you say that team is going to win 45 to 50 games. The only way they're going to get there in the immediate future is if Scoot, Ant, Sharp take another leap, remain healthy. Ayton comes into next season the way he ended this past season. And you have Williams, you know, playing most of the season to give you that backup center and rim protector. Then maybe you have enough pieces to where you're in the 35 to 45 win range, depending on some luck. That's it. Now, he did say we need more shooting. He said we need more playmakers. So it sounds like there might be some tinkering to help because they were last in the NBA in three-point shooting. You got to get more shooters around Scoot. As someone told me, if Scoot's the guy, you have to get shooters. You can't have your point guard not be a shooter and no shooters around him, right? That's mathematically impossible for success. If Ant's the guy, then you need a lot of – I mean, you need this around Scoot in way too, but you need a lot of defensive help around Ant. So they have to make some decisions there. So they will make some minor tweaks, but everything has to be perfect next year, and everyone has to take another leap up in order for them to have a chance at making the play-in. And if they don't, Cronin's cool with that. If they do, then what he said was that means, oh my God, Scoot, huge jump, Sharp, huge jump, Aiden, huge jump. Now you start looking at it and go, oh, okay, look where we are with this crew. Now I can go out and justify trying to make a bigger, stronger move to then bump that group up. Make sense?
It's all about hope, baby. That plan's great. It's all about hope.
Keep hope alive.
Yeah, I mean, that's the perfect scenario. I mean,
You're not buying.
I'll say, no, I mean, that's a dream, right? There's a lot of things that have to go right for that. Yeah. Until you have one player that you know you can build around, the NBA is hard.
Because once you have a star, gotta have a star,
and you know one that you know, like oh, that's gonna happen, and right. And right now they don't have it, so I don't know what the Blazers can do right now as far as like who you build around. Like I sort of get the fact that they're in this no man's land that they're like, well, love to build around Scoop, but don't know yet. Love to build around Sharp, don't know yet. We kind of know what we have, but. With Simons, but we don't. I don't think anyone thinks he's a franchise player. So, I'm sorry. I know that hurts you, but so you can't make the move yet. It's kind of like you have to wait and hope that it develops. Somebody appears, and they haven't had these huge shocking wins, right? Where like, oh my gosh, we got we drafted this guy 23rd, and Chris Murray is amazing.
Yeah,
he's a starter. Like, look at that. Their draft picks haven't been horrible. Chris Murray was better toward the end, but he's 23, and you're like, maybe he's serviceable. Walker's been a nice second round pick. Yeah, maybe he's in the rotation. Kamara, like, yeah, maybe he's in the rotation. Got him in that trade, but you haven't had that. And DeAndre Ayton is not. I don't know. He's not a guy you build around. He's an okay two, number two on your team. He's a really good three option, right? Like that's what you'd hope for. Right. But right now they don't have one and two. And until you have one and two in the NBA, like you're not going to, you don't know what to do.
100%.
You don't know what to do.
Now, Shay, all right? Or is it Shay or Shy?
Shay.
Gilders. Shay, okay.
Just go with his initials. Just say the initials. Everyone does.
SGA. Okay, his rookie year at 20, he only averaged 11 points, 3 assists, 3 rebounds with the Clippers. Now, that was with the Clippers. But he shot amazingly well, 48 and 37, which is a huge difference from Scoot. Then he goes to OKC and he busts up to 19, 6, and 3. So I would say that, no one in year one with the Clippers believed he was going to become a future MVP or they wouldn't have traded him. Right. In year two, no one was saying that. It wasn't until year four that I was like, oh my God. And then year five is when he really blew up. So all I'm saying is we have to give Scoot and Sharp time because especially Sharp. I think Sharp has the most talent as far as I'm concerned, where if he puts it all together, he can be an all-star. Scoot, I need to see better shooting from Scoot down the line. For me to buy into anything like that, but Sharp could be that guy. So what Cronin believes is that those are the two guys plus whatever they get in this draft, right? They're going to add another youngster that they're going to want to develop. And that guy's probably going to start or play a lot and push all those other fours you just mentioned, right? Down. Then when those guys develop is when you get to the point where, okay, now we have something to work with, but we have to wait and see that. And you're right. We haven't seen it yet. We haven't seen evidence yet, but I do think there's clearly some talent there, and that's what Cronin's riding out. Whereas on the other side, Billups, I think, wants to start playing his best players with the idea of winning as opposed to developing. And that could mean if you do that, if you brought back Malcolm Brogdon, he'd start. If you didn't, it'd be Ant and Sharp with Scoot coming off the bench. Does Cronin want that? I don't know. And you have to add a forward. And if you don't, then you're screwed anyway. So it's just a big giant mess, but I think Cronin's cool with that because he's being patient.
Yeah, like you're a GM right now. You've got plans. Like I can feel your plans and you have hope. The only thing I'll say I've been telling you the whole time, like, Scoot's numbers don't mean anything to me because they're just so inflated by minutes and bad basketball with good numbers and good basketball with bad numbers. I mean, some of his best passes went to players that blew layups, and some of his best statistical point scoring games came with 9 turnovers. And I'm using the two,
or in the fourth quarter of blowouts, right?
Right. Like, yeah. We saw it. You got eyes, man. You got eyes. Like, right. It wasn't great. He got better toward the end, and everyone saw some improvement. And that's better than getting worse. And he did get hurt. There's a reason why he was drafted 3rd overall. Everyone would have drafted him 3rd overall from everything we've, heard from others. They didn't have the first 2 picks, so they had to pick him, right? Like, there was 3 guys, and they got the 3rd one. So there's no blame for that. And development is what it is. Like, I don't know. Like, you just don't – people always talk about developing guys. Like, I don't even know who gets credit for developing Kevin Durant. You know, like, I don't know. Like, like the Lakers situation – I'm just saying, like, you talk about development.
I agree with you. I'm thinking about it. I'm
right? Now the best players in the world. Like, with Magic, you're like, well, they fired the coach to get Pat Riley, so he gets credit for that. You know, like, because Magic got him fired. The coach fired.
But he won a championship with Westhead before he got fired, too, though.
Right. You know, yeah. So it's all messy. Like, I don't look back and go,
well, but there, okay, but there are
who
some.
Who do I give credit for?
But you're talking about the transcendent talents who come, like Wemby. Like, Wemby is clearly amazing, and Pop is going to develop some finer points with him, but he's amazing regardless. So even when he blows up and becomes an MVP candidate, can Pop really say, I developed that guy? No. But there are other players who get developed.
But I'm saying SGA is not – no one's going like, this coach developed him or that. You know, it's – you get great. How you get great, I don't know. I mean, we all – we've been around this. We read everything. We see everything. Sometimes the development gets the praise goes to the 3rd assistant coach, or it goes to his coach at home, or the internet. I'm just saying, like I just don't even get too involved. Pro coaches, NBA coaches, professional coaches. Yes, no. They're supposed to develop in a way. They're supposed to set up a system of development, but they're supposed to coach the dang games, right? Like, so, and they're supposed to hire a staff that develop. Caleb Canales was the most beloved assistant coach in Blazers history. He was a guy out there sleeping on the couch, all that, became the interim, head coach. Did he develop Brandon Roy? Like, he got credit. I did a story on it, like when he was here and how much the players loved him. I'm just saying, like, great players become great. And there are people that could take credit for it, but the credit mostly goes to the great player because work ethic matters. Obviously, born with ability matters, drive matters, skill matters.
They're still being taught certain things about
especially
the game
now because they're so young.
To help enhance. Well, at any time, they're being taught. I mean, Michael Jordan was clearly great, but okay, that's a bad example. It didn't matter.
Right, because Doug Collins got fired, dude. You knew it. He started it, people. I watched his brain work. He was like, oh, crap, I'm just painting myself in the corner because he got Doug Collins fired, and then Phil Jackson took over. But he was pretty damn good as a rookie before he broke his foot.
But they still have to be taught nuances and understanding the X's and O's in the game and how to make certain plays and certain times and recognize and read things. That's important. Yeah. And then we see it. We take it for granted because they're doing these things, but there's things they've been taught that help enhance their talent. That is a thing. You can't say that's not
fine. But I'm just saying we just love these. We love to create these stories of who developed people until in the end, no.
Right. What you're saying is at the end of the day, the talent is the talent.
It's the player, the talented players.
Right. And I agree.
Like certain guys, you can ruin. I'm not saying there aren't coaches that might have ruined players, but I'm not blaming any coach for Harold Miner not being truly a baby Jordan. I'm going to blame injuries, you know, which is true. That the whole
keep
thing
talking,
is if.
Keep talking.
And I'm going to blame the fact that he just wasn't that good. I mean, he was good, but he wasn't baby Michael Jordan. I'm not going to blame, guys for busts in the NBA for lacking development. And then at the same time, is that all Harold Miner?
Harold Miner, Stadium Club rookies. Look at all that I have, dude. Upper deck, tops. But look at the Stadium Club people, alone. I have like 20. 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19.
I had no idea, 19, people. 19
Stadium Club Harold Miner rookies.
I wasn't looking for the nerve. I just happened to find it.
No, it's just hilarious. You brought him up.
You thought you were paying your kids' college education off on Harold Miner.
30 years, these are 1991, man. When I've got these, I was like, man, he's going to be baby Jordan. These are going to be worth like $1,000 each. They're worth like 5 cents each.
I say that because I read a great article about his daughter's a great athlete. She's a volleyball player, I think at Stanford. And it was good to hear about his life and how he's okay. And that, he's not living like Jordan, but he's all right.
Right.
But I'm just saying, like, we've all been through these, where players don't make it, and you don't blame the head coach for the lack of development, even though there might be there. I just don't buy into the, he's got to develop them. Talented players are going to, they're going to rise to the top. Damian Lillard was going to be a great player, even, no matter who was his coach, right? We all knew that when he was drafted, Nate McMillan was the perfect coach because he was a point guard in the NBA, blah, blah, blah. Well, he got fired. He did pretty darn good under Terry. So, I just try not to – I buy into it because I love reading about it. I love believing it. But in the end, I'm old enough now to go, great players become great.
Sure. Yeah. I don't necessarily disagree.
I don't know. And I'm just saying about Scoot, I'm not giving up on him, but I have eyes. And I don't care what the numbers say. And yes, I'm sure you can compare those numbers and look and see. But most that they're comparable. But the conversation surrounding Scoot from even his own head coach was, he's figuring it out. He needs more time. And, it wasn't like, you should see what he's doing in practice. It's blowing us away. Which, by the way, cover the blame with Simons.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times CJ and Dame were like, man, you should see this guy. Like, you guys aren't seeing it. And like when he scored 33 in the last game, I'm like, yeah, we're not surprised at all. That guy can score. He's, super athletic, all this stuff, right? So, and we know that stuff exists, but he didn't explode in the G League with numbers. And we gave him tons of excuses for it. And he didn't explode in the NBA. Now, did he embarrass himself? Absolutely not. Is there a reason to just say, flush it, he's a bust? Absolutely not. Is there a cause for some concern that he is not maybe the franchise player? Yeah. But here's the other thing about Scoot. So far, perfect. perfect teammate. Perfect, hard worker. Out in public, he cares about the community. All those things matter as a human being. It also matters as a basketball player, right? It means you can believe what he says. And no one can look at Scoot's physical attributes and the shape that he's in and say, I don't know if that guy works hard enough in the gym. But that's a thing,
New Orleans is dealing with that body though, man. Damn. That guy's built like an NFL running back.
Huh? He is, but yes, there's some God-given stuff, but
there's some Jonathan Stewart genetic. I'm not saying it doesn't work out. I'm saying there's some Jonathan Stewart genetics in there.
I'll tell my Jonathan Stewart story, right? I got here. Jonathan Stewart was on the Ducks. You remember the old interview room? It was just let's throw 700 people into a very small room and try to let media interview them. And Jonathan Stewart came out. He still had his football pants on, and he had his shirt off. And I was like, oh, that's Batman. That dude, I was like, that's Batman. Like, that dude is Batman. Like, that is a superhero. Like, that is not a regular human being. Like, he
looked
muscles.
Like a He-Man doll.
Oh my God, it wasn't fair. I was like, that. I just turned. I was like, that's Batman. And in my mind, Jonathan Stewart should have been the next Batman because he was so physically, sculpted. You're like, wow. And Scoot, but that's what I'm saying. Like, yes, there is some. Herschel Walker can tell you he never lifted a weight, but he did say he lifted, he did 1,000 sit-ups a day.
Sit-ups and push-ups.
1,000 push-ups or whatever it was. Yeah. Scoot's, you don't have to worry about his work ethic right now. You don't have to worry about the fact that he cares right now. And those are big things in a 20-year-old because there are a lot of distractions. I mean, just ask the Grizzlies. Like, there's things that could take your star player to a place where you're not worried about on the court. And when you talk about shape, New Orleans, I mean, there are no doubts on Zion's basketball abilities, but there are about, does he work hard on it? Does he, is he in shape? And obviously he got hurt. And when you're not in shape, you get hurt. So those are all positives, but you're not going 10-year NBA All-Star right now. Like, you're not checking that box of guarantee. True. And with Sharp, we have such a small window of where he was showing it. Now, there are stories of Sharp in practice. There are stories of, like, wow, steal at number 7 from NBA experts and things like that. So there's hope. But the rest of the roster it's a mess. It's a mess.
I agree.
And they know it.
So what would you like to see them do this offseason?
So,
if anything.
I would like to see them get a time machine. No, I'm sorry. I wouldn't take this job as a general manager because I don't know a quick path to success. And when I say quick path, I mean a quick path to figuring out what the path is to success because I don't know where we're at. I think that they have to, and I'm glad that Joe Cronin didn't make promises. I feel bad that Chauncey Billups says he thinks he wants to win a little bit more because I don't see that as being – I don't think that's the way to go. I think you have to draft again with these two picks. I'm fine with a deal that gets you another 20-something-year-old, like trade a few for one that is a player that you believe that is 22, 23 years old that has all-star potential. But the problem is those guys aren't available. Like, no one wants to trade those guys, But look, what's Grant doing on this roster? I mean, why? Like, why? Like, what? Brogdon, you blew it. Look, that's the stuff I question Joe Cronin about.
That's not over yet.
Brogdon should.
That's not over yet. That's not over yet.
Yes. Okay, fine. Get something. But, right. It's not over yet. I don't know if you're going to get as much, and I think you might have overestimated what you could have gotten.
They didn't want picks. They want players, which I give them credit for that. They want some kind of player.
Yeah,
right? That doesn't happen.
And then you're overestimating.
But listen,
in my opinion, what you could get for Brogdon.
Maybe, but if you can't get players, the draft you want picks in is 25, not 24. So there's going to be some hope there.
Detroit should be a lesson to you. They held on to two really, to NBA players that people wanted for contention, and they didn't trade Bogdanovich, and they didn't trade Burks, and then the Knicks got him for like a second round pick and they got a player in Quincy Grimes that maybe he's young and maybe he's a starter, but he's hurt again. So I'm just saying, like, I don't see Brogdon because of his injury, his resume and the position he plays and what he's great at. I don't know if they're going to get more, but you're right. It's not over yet. It's not over yet.
Maybe they package him in the 49ers, the Golden State pick. Might be enticing.
Or maybe they find a place for Grant and get somebody young and good, that's right there. And again, we always talk about this. I don't see those trades, but you don't see them until they happen, right?
Right.
Kevin Durant is on Phoenix, right? Go to the Wayback Machine when he's on the Warriors. You're like, so he's going to play for the Nets. And then he's going to go and demand a trade for Phoenix. And sorry, Knicks fan, you're nowhere in this mix at all. How is that possible in my Wayback Machine, right? Like, I already bought the jersey. So there are ways to do it. But the track, there is no Joe Cronin track record really yet, right? There's also that other than not making anything that's been significant. I mean, the Sharp draft pick could end up being, you know, really great, and not everyone would have picked him seventh. The Scoot pick right. is, you know, of course you pick Scoot. I have no blame for Scoot. But, you know, the Warriors got a way back in the draft, they got a starter.
The Scoot pick, you can get we can give him credit for if he works out, because I mean, not because right, he picked him, but because he made the decision to keep him as opposed to appeasing Dame. But
well,
also,
you told me, you said that might have been ownership.
No, I'm saying ownership. I was saying ownership was with it. Not it was necessary then.
I'm just saying, like, if you want to, you could take blame from anybody.
No, I'm
and
just
put
saying,
it on others.
I'm just yes. saying, but at the same time, if Scoot doesn't work out and they never make a leap in the next few years, then of course it becomes, oh, you alienated and then had to trade Damian for a guy who didn't work out. So a lot's tied in to Scoot for him. So for me, first thing, okay, I've said this to you numerous times. I'm not going to take this team seriously until they have a legit forward on the court other than Grant. There's not one forward on this team that's startable other than Grant. So they have to draft. Their draft pick had better be.
But yet they've all started.
I know.
One of them has started.
Ideally, their draft pick is a small forward or a power forward. One of the two.
6'8", baby. Just find me a 6'8", because then you can split it, right? You can grant it. They can play either way.
Or you go out and you make some kind of deal to bring in maybe a guy who's underachieved and hope that he can still blossom with you, like a Patrick Williams from the Bulls or something like that. And you hope that maybe they take the same path as what they're hoping Ayton's going to do, where they reach their potential here, or like Lauri Markkanen did. If you can find someone like that, oh my God, that's amazing, right? So until they get some forwards that are startable, other than Grant, then I can't take this team remotely seriously. And, you know, Chauncey said flat out he didn't see a future starter or a full-time permanent lockdown starter at the forward position amongst those young kids that not everyone would be so excited about. So you have to address that. If they do that and then maybe get a veteran, like legit knockdown shooter to add to this, and you come in next season and you remain healthy, I think they win – you know, north of 35 games. I think if they had been completely healthy this season, they went over 30. So if you're completely healthy and you make a couple tweaks and everyone gets a little bit better, you're winning over 35. Does that get you in the postseason? Probably not. You're probably back in the lottery, but you're back in the lottery in the deep draft, and then you sort of go from there. But that's pretty much all I think anyone can really hope for at this point, because it doesn't sound like Cronin's looking to make major moves. He wants Scoot, Sharp, Ant, and Grant, excuse me, and Ayton to lead the way by continuing to grow and develop.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see a path.
You're like, blow it up.
I don't see a path to 35 wins. That's that.
If everyone's healthy and those guys.
Yeah. I mean, 35, I guess, you know, that's not a ton. It's more than I would guess. And I also don't know what the benefit of winning 35 games is with the squad, right? You know, with a
If they're able to do that, that means those guys have taken a jump. That's the benefit.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
If they've taken a jump, that's good.
Right. If they won 35 games, Sharp has shown that, oh my goodness, like, and Scoot's like, oh, that's our point guard of the future.
And Ayton, and then what do you do with Simons? Exactly. You can't win 35 unless guys improve.
The one thing I'll say is there is so much room to try stuff with this roster, because there's not, you know, because there's no path, right? There's no obvious path. So I hope that Cronin does something, or look, I hope that whoever they draft shocks the world and is a great player. It's not unheard of. And
if they got a Brandon Miller, that'd be great. But there isn't one in this draft, because he'd be the unquestioned number one pick.
Right.
Right.
But I mean, like, there's guys that this isn't a draft where everyone's like, no doubters. These are, you know, it's like, oh, this guy could be first, second, third. But I mean, there's guys that we saw play in the tournament that were 7 feet tall, that were very athletic, and you can hope maybe they turn into something great. But I look at the team and I don't see anyone that I'm like, oh, got to keep. Like, you can't convince me there's anyone that I'm like, no way I can get rid of them. And that that's where we are. Until you want to see a forward, I want to see somebody step up and be like, okay, that's one. We got one, right? And that's where the Simons thing is kind of tough, because I thought they had one. You know, I really did. I thought that's what – and then they drafted two guards. So I'm not saying it was the wrong picks. But it does say like, oh, so you don't have the one. Because if you have the one, the Warriors don't draft – now he's old. But like 27-year-old Steph Curry, they didn't go and draft another point guard, you know, that they thought that was it. That they might be – and then call him transcendent. You know what I mean? Like, right. So it's weird to not know. If I'm Simon, I'm like, all right, what are you doing with me? And if not, let me go. Let me go. Let me play on a team that's got chances to win, and that I'm not going to be like, oh, how sore is this or that, because I don't know if I'll play. Like, how – if you're Simon's this season, you just flush it, right? I mean, it's just a total waste.
Absolutely. I would want to trade if I'm Simons, because even if I'm the starting two guard, do I want to be next to Scoot? Is that the pathway for my success? Or do I want to be the lead guy? So he's going into year seven, which when he said that on Monday, I was like, I looked at him.
It's crazy.
I was like, damn, seven. He goes, yep. Yeah.
But 3 years, he was nowhere. Like, we didn't even know. He was secret. He was a secret weapon in the back. Like, they're developing him in the lab.
Exactly.
And he's going to come out. He's going to be great. And he did. He got developed in the lab. Yeah. Like, give Terry Stotts credit in that crew. Give Neil O'Shea credit in that crew. They developed him in the lab. That was Neil O'Shea's pick, you know, and he said it.
Chauncey took him to the next level, though.
That's fine, but he came out. Terry developed him those years.
Yeah.
And when he got the opportunity to play, you were like, oh, okay. I see what you've been saying, Dame. I see what you've been saying, CJ. I see what you've been saying, Neil. Like, this guy is an NBA starter. He's a potential all-star. And now he's in year seven. He's going to be 26, right? Gosh. That's crazy. No. Like, he's not young anymore. Oh, like, he's prime.
He's 25, isn't he? Oh, my God.
He's 25 now, so, right? So it'd be 26, which is crazy. So I'm just saying, like, there's that. And what do you do? Like, I don't think he's a two. I think he's a lead guard. Because, you know, there is this thing that we very, you know, every once in a while we forget about defense. Like, he can't guard a two. He can't guard a one. But I mean, that well. But I'm just saying, like, you get help when you guard the ones, you can get help. Like, it's hard to get help with
the
two.
Bigger than him, right?
Yeah, like, and stronger. Like, he's not, you know. He's gotten stronger, obviously, but no one's going to – you don't look at him and Scoot and go, I wonder who's going to win in an arm wrestle. You know, you kind of know, right? And I don't know. Arm wrestling might be a talent that doesn't have to do with muscle. So I apologize to arm wrestlers out there. Did we touch everything?
Everything. Well, I mean, everything that pretty much I think needs to be touched at this point.
Do you want one in this draft? That's my question. We can talk about that later. Do you want the pressure of having one and not knowing who to pick? Like, is Sarr the guaranteed number one?
Top two guys who are projected by a lot of people are centers.
Yeah.
So then you're drafting a center.
Yeah, but I'm okay with that because I feel that now
you already have a starting and a backup.
So some of the centers can shoot. Or potential can shoot.
Yeah, but
I mean, I haven't seen enough of the French guys.
They need a Brandon Miller. They need a Williams from OKC. They need a legitimate three or a legitimate four. You have a four, you can play Grant three till he's gone. Then you need a three, or you get a three and play Grant at the four. Like, you have to have somebody legit.
Yeah, and honestly, the league's not set up for centers that can't shoot. So, you know, if they can't shoot now, they might be able to. I'm just saying, like, did you think Joel Embiid was going to, you know, no one could envision this guy being a three-point shooting, like, that's his, that well. I mean, obviously, he was an extremely talented player with a nice touch. But we weren't in a, even him at his age, did you think that that's the guy knocking down killer threes in a playoff game? Like, no. Nah. Like, Patrick Ewing now would be shooting threes. He could shoot.
Yeah.
It just wasn't a thing. I mean, we know LaMarcus. I mean, LaMarcus got killed because he couldn't shoot threes because he was like, he was 1 foot short of being great at that, right? Like, he left the mid. But now if LaMarcus came out and he did change his game by the end, he'd have to. And he would be better at it because right. it's a different world. It's a different NBA. But correct. Yes, in a perfect world, for sure. They're drafting a three or a four.
Right.
A three or a four that can, you know, really step in and be like guaranteed that's their starter. But I am interested to see what happens with, you know, what they do with the Brogdons, the Grants, the Williams even, and what you could do. And Simons. To me, the biggest, if you're going to ask me, like, what am I most interested in, like, which player, it's Simons. Because okay. I think he could choose a path and the Blazers can choose a path. Or they could kick the can. And why? Why?
And why? No, I agree. That's why I come back to it's all about Scoot and Sharp and this upcoming draft pick, how they develop down the line. And Ayton, everyone else is tradable, should be traded, doesn't fit. You know, at some point, age becomes, like we just said, Ant's about to turn 26, and your two principal young pieces are 20. That's a 6-year gap. And it's a position redundancy. So therefore, yeah, it makes no sense in the end. It's not gonna fit. Anyway, we good for this week? We knock it down. I think we knock it down. All right, that's it for this episode of the Blazer Focus Podcast. I'm Aaron Fentress. He's Craig Burnback. We'll be back next week to mull over more of the Blazers' future. The lottery is May 12th, so we still got a few weeks for that. And after that, of course, the draft.
That's my birthday.
Is it? Nice. You know what? Today's my birthday, by the way.
Oh, he's 28.
I'm 20. How'd you know? I look 28, though. I do not look 56, do I?
Wow. All right, you're older than me. I love it. May 12th, anyway. By the way, the anniversary of the Knicks winning the lottery to pick Patrick Ewing. Oh, what a special day. I remember it well. I had four friends over.
Let's sign off if we have to relive this. Such a good day. Thanks for listening.